Hello.
Well, hello.
Been a while.
It has. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. Another year older, same as you.
Indeed. Happy birthday to both of us.
I mean, I'm pretty sure we actually went through that process on the actual days.
Yeah, sure, but the listeners didn't, so. So, dear listeners, if you want to wish us happy birthdays, our voice messages on Anchor are open.
As per usual. So, anyway, welcome back to everybody, including ourselves. My name is Martin, and I'm apparently the brains of this operation.
And I'm Greg. I'm the voice of the operation because I can't stop talking traditionally
Yes,
or
I'm sure they remember.
historically. But at the end of last season, we broke me, which reminds me that this is season two. Welcome to season two of the Right Wings podcast.
Yes, you may want to actually break it down for everybody as to this idea you had of doing it in a season by season sort of basis, because I sure as hell don't understand what the hell you were talking about.
Well, you are kind of going a little bit off brand there, being the brains of the operation and all. But yes, this is season two, and the mind boggles that this is season two. The idea was to release the podcast season by season from September-ish to May-ish, kind of mirroring the structure or release schedule of a TV show, and then take a break during the summer so we can go to the Bermudas and sip Mai Tais and whatnot.
And wallow in the glory of awesomeness, I suppose.
Surely, as future New York Times best-selling authors, we can have a few months off from the show. But yeah, it's generally a good idea to take a break, to schedule in a hiatus where we can,
Have birthdays.
Have birthdays and just rest and restructure stuff because we've been brainstorming about how to take this podcast to the next level or to take it forward and keep it interesting and make it continuously better.
We are persistently looking for guests as well. So obviously having the influx of additional voices is always going to be keeping things interesting for you, the listeners, and also for us, the presenters, because it's always nice for us to get somebody else's input and viewpoint on the things that we're talking about.
That's very, very true. And also, as an added benefit, the more people are talking, the less chance I get to talk. So yeah, there are going to be a lot of new things continuously happening on the podcast, hopefully, as we come up with new ideas and experiment with them.
And as always, the lines of contact will be open. So, by all means, feel free to share any ideas you guys have with us, so that if there's anything you want to hear us talking about, or if there's anything you think we should be covering, then let us know. It's all stuff that we can take into consideration.
Absolutely. Let's run through those here as well. not just at the end. So you can send us an email, writerings.podcast@gmail.com. You can send us voice messages on Anchor. Of course, you can always talk to us on Twitter.
I've got the new Tomb Raider game, Shadows of the Tomb Raider. Play it. It's awesome. And it was a belated birthday present, and it's amazing. I absolutely love it. And it's just sucking away all my time and motivation for writing, because it's just so good.
Well, leisure time is important as well. So,
yes.
I've been playing Warcraft again. The new expansion came out, so
I heard about that. I heard a lot about that.
I'm certainly not the one to hold you against the wall for playing games.
Yeah, it seems a lot of people have been getting back into Warcraft with new expansions and things.
Yeah, it's full and it's laggy, and you know, but that's kind of. I waited a month or almost a month to jump back, still a lot of people. It's nice to see some life in the game, though. So,
yeah, absolutely.
But speaking of birthday presents, I wanted to brag a little bit because and it's actually connected to the topic that we were talking about and kind of. My side of projects and things I want to be accountable for. So I've been doing a lot of odd jobs during the year that had nothing to do with writing. At the end of it, they offered me to have an iPad. And so I yes, very nice. I'm completely in love with it. And it's an iPad Pro. So for my birthday, my friends got me an Apple Pencil.
Ooh.
Which is seriously the best thing since sliced bread. And I'm not even kidding. This is the closest thing you can get to writing on paper without writing on paper, bought this app that it's called Nebo My Script, and it recognizes my handwriting, which is more than I can say about myself. and so basically, I started writing blog posts for my day job longhand. And it's just awesome, and I'm saying this part to brag because it's kind of a gimmick, writing internet content by hand. On the other hand, I do believe that writing longhand triggers a very different part of your brain, of your creative process, and. Neal Stephenson famously wrote some of his novels by hand, and Stephen King also writes his books using a fountain pen. So anyway, long story short, or long story long, I've been writing longhand, which I love to do, and it actually makes practical sense, because the reason I don't do that is because transferring written material into the computer is always a troublesome endeavor. But now I can just actually write on my iPad by hand. And it feels like I'm writing in ink. And then I, you know, double tap it, and it turns it into a text file, which is pretty neat.
It really is.
I wanted to share this because ever since I started doing this in the past couple of weeks, I can feel or I can see that my productivity went up, I'm much more, much less prone for procrastination, because it's just a joy to sit down and, you know, start writing, and it's a whole different process, and it's a whole different creative feeling that I got. So I'm really excited, and I have a couple of projects in mind that I would love to do this fall. And now that I have kind of the energy or kind of the momentum to get into them, so that's pretty neat.
That's awesome.
And yeah, speaking of, we were talking earlier about how we need a kick in the butt. And I wanted to share two books, well, actually four books, with you and the audience that I read in the hiatus that we had. Three of them from John Scalzi.
Yes.
And the other is, hold on, let me double check the name, because I don't want to butcher it. M. Lemot, Bird by Bird. And the reason I wanted to mention these books is because, first of all, Scalzi is awesome, and
he is, yes.
And as much as I like his fiction, I enjoy his nonfiction and his blog even more. And I've been reading the kind of the compiled version of his whatever blog, which is at whatever.scalzi.com, and everybody should read it.
Yes, and I've read a couple of those, and he's got
yes
fantastic way of talking about things.
Yeah, and especially writing, and I and the contrast, this Bird by Bird book is kind of a very, I don't want to say esoteric, but almost like that. It's very metaphor heavy, and it's very kind of artistic book about writing and how to write. And it proved to be very, very difficult for me to make use of it. Not because it's bad, and not because it's bad advice or useless advice, but just the presentation and the style isn't something that that's useful to me. On the other hand, Scalzi's posts or articles about writing is exactly the kick in the nuts that that I need personally. And I recommend reading his stuff on what writing is and what it isn't, because he's very, very pragmatic and very practical about it. That was a pretty good gearing up for the fall. Are you doing NaNoWriMo this year?
No, because I don't do it.
All right.
To be put it simply, I don't do NaNoWriMo.
Why not?
I don't know. I know I'm not the only one that doesn't, because somebody that you and I both very much respect, Jenna Moresi, she doesn't do it either. It's just not really something I've been interested in. I don't do it.
Yeah, no, that's a perfectly valid you know, position. What's interesting though, what I love about NaNoWriMo is the energy that the writer community gets from it. I mean,
that's true.
November is just a joy to kind of see writers share their progress and all that good stuff. So it should be interesting, and we should cover that on the podcast, because I suspect a lot of our listeners, if they are writers, and I hope they are, they are doing NaNo, and And if they aren't, it's not for everyone, but I do think that at least once, everybody should at least start or try to gear up for it, because it's a good source of that energy. I really love that.
I don't know if you read any of those books, the Empire Trilogy with Jenny Wirtz, and lots and lots and lots of books of fantasy books. Well, I really love his work and really love his world building. And on a side note, I really admire that, you know, how fantasy books kind of, and not just fantasy books, but many authors stick to their protagonists, no matter what. And and Feist, on the other hand, kind of, takes you through, it's like I don't know, a dozen or more books in neat trilogies and quadrilogies and pentalogies and all those kind of stuff,
etc. Et
but he kind of deals with the passage of time, like characters, even main characters, get old and they die. One of the heroes of the second or third book dies because he falls and breaks his hip at the age of, I don't know, 80 or 90 or something. And then, you know, it becomes kind of a story element of how later generations trying or not trying to live up to their ancestors, and it's pretty cool. But anyway, he always talks about how the most important thing that you need to know is where you want to end up, and everything else, you know, everything else will fall in place, because it doesn't matter if you kind of get distracted and take the story to a different direction, as long as you get to the place. Yeah. And that's why I said it's kind of a counterpoint, and not a counterpoint, because yeah, he follows character and he follows surprising things, but at the same time, you know, he has a very clear idea of the ending. And
I'd say vaguely similar to that. So I usually like to have an idea of where I'm going, but the bits in the middle are always fluid.
Another creative person, although not a writer, I'm sure many of our listeners watch YouTube, and if you watch YouTube even a little bit, you are likely to be familiar with Casey Neistat and his vlogs.
Can't say I am.
You should check him out. He's a pretty brilliant and really creative filmmaker, and he's also a public speaker as a technology entrepreneur, and he says that kind of life in general and work and creative work in particular is kind of like he calls it the Tarzan method. You know, you have point A and point B on opposite ends of the jungle, and you know, you grab a vine, you sling as far as it takes you, and then you grab on to another and another that may not be, you know, the straight path across the jungle, but it's what's available to you. So there's definitely a huge element of surprise in what we do.
Oh, absolutely. I think the reason why I prefer to pants it, I suppose would be the term, is what I found is that you can be writing something and what you've got in your head will certainly not mean anything to the characters you're writing, because they, when you're writing your characters, they do take on a life of their own. They do have their own decisions, and they do start telling you things that you never thought of when you were planning things out. And you can start writing, you can start following the particular path that your characters are trying to lead you on. And then suddenly something will just crop up and you'll be like, wow, this is actually really interesting. Let's see where this goes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That was kind of the biggest surprise for me when I started writing seriously, is that I always thought that you plan things out and you use math and structure and whatever science to
the science of writing.
Yeah, and then all that remains, that like that's the work part. And then all that remains, is sit down and write it. And how hard can it be? Very, very hard. Is there something like when you start something new, or you try developing an idea? Is there something that you can't proceed without? Is there something that has to be there, or there is nothing?
A beginning usually helps.
Yeah, that's kind of hard.
As I've mentioned in one of our earlier podcasts from last season, actually, for me, I have to do things chronologically. I'm not one of those people that can start at the beginning and then just write scenes as they occur to me and then just fill in the gaps. I can't do that. It has to be chronological so that everything lines up in my mind so that I know the order of things. I just can't work any other way. My brain won't let me. I suppose, obviously, knowing the principal characters that you're going to be using, that is definitely a bonus.
Yeah.
Apart from that, I think that's the main things that I really need is, knowing where I'm starting and where I'm ending. The characters I'm using, some of the basic plot points, and some bits of dialogue, and that's pretty much it.
I'm always amazed just how sometimes. So I'm always amazed that you are so much more normal than I am. I take offense at that. Really? No, what I mean is like I have, the reason why I asked this is that I was thinking that because I write a lot of blog posts and articles and those kind of things for work, and I always had a tendency for kind of an artistic flair, which doesn't really work in marketing, or doesn't work the way it works in fiction. So I always tended to bury the lead, and I was constantly called up out on it, and I spent a lot of times, like I can write a 500-700 word blog post in about half an hour and then spend 3.5 or more hours editing it, and it ends up upside down. Because and that kind of instilled in me the value of, I like to write things chronologically as well. That's what's natural to me. That's what's that's how it comes out. But very, very soon, I end up turning it upside down and just shuffling things around. But I do need to have a title, which is kind of a silly thing to have before you have anything else. I need to have a title, and I kind of need to have the last sentence. That's usually the first thing I write down, is kind of the last sentence before fading into not black but white.
Yeah, before and the
so compare
final ride into the sunset or whatever.
Oh yeah. And then he said dot dot dot, and that's kind of the end of things. And then, you know, then I can start actually developing the stuff that I set out to write in the first place.
Just a quick thing I wanted to add is that I don't usually need to have a title at the start, but it bugs me all the while I don't have one.
Oh yeah, it's like, you know, how do you name the folder or document or whatever? You know, you can't have, you know, WIP, I don't know, number 980.
Yeah,
that's just silly.
My current work in progress is simply titled Pain, and yet that's just a particular feeling from the main character within the first chapter that's got nothing to do with the overall story. It's like, just get a title, put it in there and leave it. Come on.
And this is why I kind of, you know, when I'm reading poetry, it's such a weird thing to when poets in particular play with the titles, is that you never know if it's part of the poem, it's not part of the poem, it's kind of alluding to the poem or not alluding to what about scope? So when you have an idea, do you know if it's going to be a novel, if it's going to be a short story or something in between, or
as far as I know, I don't write short stories. The problem I have, because I've never really tried writing a short story before, everything I've written has always been intended to be novel length.
Mm.
The issue I have with short stories is figuring out how to get all the major plot points of them into the actual story. Because obviously it's a short story, so you have to get an entire novel's worth of plot into a fraction of the size. I don't know how to do that.
Well, you know, you do it after you've written 90,000 words, you delete, I don't know, 90% of it.
I think one of the Black Library authors his advice was basically start at the middle.
Really? For a short story?
Yeah.
No, short stories are kind of, I have a similar issue with short stories. I would love to, I'd love to write short stories. It's just, my brain automatically goes to, you know, huge epic scopes and novels, and not even novels, novel series.
Which is
kind of silly when you think about it. Do you read short stories?
Oh, absolutely. Usually the short stories I come across tend to be within the scope of the Warhammer 40,000 universe, because there's quite a lot of short stories that come out of that. In fact, I've actually got a book I ordered a couple of days ago, which is an omnibus. It's got 3 full-length novels and it's got 12 short stories in it as well. So I'm looking forward to reading that. I've quite frequently picked up the Black Library books that are just anthologies of short stories. And there's amazing stories in there. Absolutely stunning.
Yeah, well, that's kind of disappointing for me, because I was hoping that I can't really think in terms of short stories because I don't tend to read them, but apparently that's not a factor. So now I have to figure out another, I don't know, excuse or whatever. So thank you for that.
That's quite all right. I aim to please.
But no, I really do think that you know, if you want to write, you have to read, and the more you read of a particular thing, the more your thinking becomes attuned to it. So one of my projects now this fall is to read more and to kind of go into the whole short story and sci-fi magazines territory, which I usually, you know, I see a cool idea or a cool blurb or something like that, and then I make a note, and I will have to read this, and then I buy the 7,000th new novel that I'm gonna read instead, which kind of limits one's exposure to a diverse range of writing, which is not a good thing.
Have you seen the micro sci-fi fantasy fiction account on Twitter?
No.
Basically, small science fiction and fantasy stories, as it were, in the space of a tweet. And they are brilliant.
Okay, all right. Can you send that over to me? Because I'm going to check it out, and I'm going to put it in the show notes as well.
Because I absolutely will. For other people like myself who are fans of the Warhammer universes, there is also Micro Grimdark, which follows the same format, but it's specifically for the Warhammer 40,000 universe. And they're also absolutely brilliant. So I'll link you to both of them.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about Infinity War.
No, let's not.
for those not aware, Martin has been delaying the pleasures of watching Avengers Infinity War until just yesterday as of this recording. So the wounds are fresh. And the emotions are still, you know, riding high. So, but it's now that I have some distance from it, and you know, punched a number of holes in the wall when I came out from theater. My thought went to Hemingway, and that the Russo brothers really took the kill your darlings advice quite literally.
I'll say.
So, you know, spoilers, a lot of people die in Infinity War.
That's the thing, there's a lot of people who have gone with the kill your darlings thing. There's a particular quote about to Stephen King.
Yeah. I saw it attributed.
I believe it says.
Sorry?
I believe Stephen King says, even when it breaks your egotistical scribbler's little heart, murder your darlings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, what do you think of it as a, not as a fan or not as a, you know, as a viewer, but as a storyteller yourself? I think it was brilliantly structured. It was not wasting any time killing Loki in the first one, yeah, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. I mean, I love
I love Loki as well. He would have been so good throughout that movie, especially the interactions he has with Thor. But it really does kind of set the tone for the story. And speaking as a storyteller myself, you can't have an enemy like Thanos, who is basically, he wields this godlike power in the form of the Infinity Gauntlet, and not have people die. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I mean, he is immensely powerful. Stones, as we see by the fact that he just beats the ever-living crap out of the Hulk.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those things that has to happen. The entire MCU has been steadily building up to this moment. If Thanos had been anything less than the unstoppable force of destruction that he was, it wouldn't have meant anything. There would have been no belief that this was the ultimate enemy that we have seen so far.
And
it felt like there was no consequences.
Yeah.
We need to see people die and to know that this was an enemy that not only had the will but the power to actually carry out his plans and to just decimate everything.
Yeah, definitely. And the fact that we don't just, you know, see, you know, faceless CGI or not CGI extras die, but, you know, Black Panther, Spider-Man, most of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Gamora was a very personal death.
Oh, yeah.
And that, more than anything, that is what surprised me, because thanks to the joys of social media, I still got some spoilers. So ahead of time, I had managed to work out that Spider-Man was going to die. I'd managed to work out that Gamora was going to die. But what surprised me when I watched the film was actually just the fact that Thanos genuinely loves Gamora as a daughter.
Yeah.
And yet he still makes the decision that he does.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure you saw the Nike's Copernic ad and the memes that followed.
The what?
The memes, and, you know, there was a Thanos one, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Believing in something. But two things, like, there were three things that were kind of noteworthy immediately. One is, they had stakes and they followed through, and Thanos was believable because we you know, it's the show don't tell. They didn't just tell us that he was all powerful, but they actually showed. And the third thing is that it's funny you should mention the antagonist being kind of likable is that Thanos, this, like, Infinity War was about Thanos. He was it was his story. It was his kind of journey. Yeah. And
it was very much that whole thing of how the antagonist is the protagonist of their own story.
Oh yeah.
It felt very much like that.
I you know, there were moments when I kind of felt for the guy. It's, you know, he was the last of his kind, you know, he was, at least in his perspective, but, you know, you can see his point. He was proven right, and he just upped the scales, and, you know, he sacrificed everything, like Gamora. And what I found interesting is that there are two, with no offense to any other villains in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but yeah, let's call a spade a spade. There are two good villains in all those movies. One is Loki, and the other is Thanos, and that's because they have their own agendas and they have their own personalities. It's not just the big bad that they have to.
Ultron was kind of likable because of just the personality he had.
And because of, you know, the voice that kind of sold the thing.
Yeah, absolutely. But he's still largely forgettable. His agenda, it was It didn't feel like he threatened the entire world. Really.
Yeah, it was kind of distant from the, no pun intended, but and because, you know, his expression was to kind of do, multiply himself, like to have that big finale, and while, you know, Infinity War could have done without the big CGI fight, it would have still delivered the same impact, because it didn't matter if, you know, if they had the big CGI battle scene at the end, Thanos was still coming, and ultimately they had to face him, while with Ultron, they had to, you know, once they beat the army, there was nothing left.
They had to stop the big chunk of the big chunk of world falling down.
Yeah, and with Loki, you know, there was a stake, there was a kind of something to fight against beyond the faceless monsters that kind of there for entertainment and for 3D movie tickets to be sold, but yeah, so both Loki and Thanos were relatable, and you know, you could identify with them, and that's kind of the that's a responsibility of the storyteller is to introduce and show the antagonist just as much as the protagonist, because that's how you create tension and impact. And Thanos was an exemplary villain.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his methods were horrific. The scale of what he was intending was horrific, and there's a point that he makes. He says that with a snap of his fingers, half of the population of the universe will just cease to exist. There's no suffering in that. It's a mercy, and yeah, that is almost a grace that he gives the universe. And also, it's the reason behind what he's doing. He's doing it so that the survives will prosper. He's insane for the scope of what he's doing, but his ultimate methods, his ultimate reasoning is relatively altruistic.
Yeah, and you know, in the comics, you know, he does it because he's in love with death.
Oh, yes. Right.
And the fact that they changed it, and they changed, because that's insanity. That's not something that you can relate to. That's not something that you feel that is a valid reason to do anything other than, you know, being insane. But yes. Here, you know, everybody can relate to, you know, too many mouths, not enough food to go around.
Mm-hmm.
And that one line kind of sets him up as, you know, doing the unpopular thing for the greater good, and yep. that's an interesting thing. And the third thing is that it's funny you should mention the antagonist being kind of likable, is that Thanos, this, like, Infinity War was about Thanos. He was it was his story. It was his kind of journey. Yeah. And
it was very much that whole thing of how the antagonist is the protagonist of their own story.
Oh yeah,
it felt very much like that.
I you know, there were moments when I kind of felt for the guy. It's, you know. He was the last of his kind, you know, he was, at least in his perspective, but, you know, you can see his point, he was proven right, and he just upped the scales, and you know, he sacrificed everything, like Gamora. And what I found interesting is that there are two, with no offense to any other villains in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but yeah, let's call a spade a spade. There are two good villains in all those movies. One is Loki, and the other is Thanos, and that's because they have their own agendas and they have their own personalities. It's not just the big bad that they have to.
Ultron was kind of likable because of just the personality he had,
and because of the voice that kind of sold the thing.
Yeah, absolutely, but he's still largely forgettable. His agenda, it didn't feel like he threatened the entire world. Really?
Yeah, it was kind of distant from the, no pun intended, but and because you know his expression was to kind of multiply himself, like to have that big finale, and while you know Infinity War could have done without the big CGI fight, it would have still delivered the same impact, because it didn't matter if they had the big CGI battle scene at the end. Thanos was still coming, and ultimately they had to face him, while with Ultron they had to once they beat the army, there was nothing left.
I had to stop the big chunk of the big chunk of world falling down.
Yeah, and with Loki, you know, there was a stake, there was a kind of something to fight against beyond the faceless monsters that kind of there for entertainment and for 3D movie tickets to be sold. But yeah, so both Loki and Thanos were relatable, and you could identify with them, and that's kind of the that's a responsibility of the storyteller is to introduce and show the antagonist just as much as the protagonist, because that's how you create tension and impact. And Thanos was an exemplary villain.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his methods were horrific. The scale of what he was intending was horrific, and there's a point that he makes. He says that with a snap of his fingers, half of the population of the universe will just cease to exist. There's no suffering in that. It's a mercy. And yeah, that is almost a grace that he gives the universe. And also it's the reason behind what he's doing. He's doing it so that the survives will prosper. He's insane for the scope of what he's doing, but his ultimate methods, his ultimate reasoning is relatively altruistic.
Yeah, and you know, in the comics, you know, he does it because he's in love with death.
Oh, yes. Right.
And the fact that they changed it, and they change, because that's insanity. That's not something that you can relate to. That's not something that you feel that is a valid reason to do anything other than being insane. But yes. Here, everybody can relate to too many mouths, not enough food to go around.
Mm-hmm.
And that one line kind of sets him up as, you know, doing the unpopular thing for the greater good. And yep. that's an interesting thing.
Just a random little thought occurred to me. It's amazing how this is just completely apropos of nothing really, but it's amazing how we're doing a writing podcast, it's essentially a writing podcast, and yet still it still touches on other forms of media, especially when it comes to films, because obviously writing is a key part of films, because you still need to write the storyline.
Not only that, but I can't remember who said this. I think it was Scorsese, but I wouldn't bet the house on it. So if any of our listeners can set us straight or confirm, I think it was Scorsese that he said that you need three things for a good movie. Or maybe it's Hitchcock. I know. Three things required for a great movie: a script, and a script. So a movie starts with writing.
Yeah.
And I really hope that for those, you know, who can't remember the beginning of the podcast, we promised that we would have on more guests, and at least one of the guests, I hope, will be a screenwriter who can, you know, put these things into context, because screenwriting, from where I'm standing or from what I can tell, is basically the same thing as any kind of fiction writing. It just uses a different format.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it.
We're coming up on the usual kind of time for things now. So I think now is pretty much as good a time as any to start closing this one down.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's remind folks that we like to talk, but, well, you know, some one of us likes to talk more than the other, or tends to, anyway.
Have a choice in the matter.
But we also like to listen, so we also like to talk to others. So if you have a comment or complaint or idea, or just want to be on the show because you're a writer or a storyteller of any kind, and you want to share your perspectives, talk to us, absolutely, either through email, writerings.podcast@gmail.com, or send us a voice message on Anchor, or talk to us on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. And all the usual links will be in the show notes, as usual.
Yeah, all of the links, including everything that we talked about, everything that we mentioned. I will do my best to not forget any of those, because sometimes I do. And also, you know, links to Martin's books, which you should buy, and a link to my website, which you should read once I start doing it properly.
Absolutely.
Shameless plugs
for everybody.
Yeah. We thank you for your attention this week, and we will be back now on season 2 of the Writerings podcast next week, right?
Yep, absolutely.
All righty then. Well, it's good to be back. I think
it absolutely is.
I miss this. I miss our little chats, technical issues notwithstanding.
Yeah, at least it went better this time.
Oh yeah, and you know, it's it makes me happy to, you know, I imagine there are some people who would have given up, like just a behind the scenes fun fact. We recorded this in two passes, two goes. Anyway. English is not my first language. And some people would have given up, right? I would say that's, you know, it's too hard, it's, you know, it's annoying, it's whatever. But we stuck with it, for better or worse. I think it's for the better.
Yeah, I reckon so as well.
I will stop talking now because I start to annoy myself even. So, Martin, if you will lead us out.
So, this has been the return of Rice Rings. Thank you very much for listening, and we will speak to you again next week.
Indeed. Bye.
Goodbye for now.